From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, looking to capitalize on the shock created by the Supreme Court's decision on Monday, which redefined the word sex beyond the biological reality of men and women. Senate Democrats today attempted to push through the deceptively named Equality Act. Thankfully, they were blocked by Senators Holly, Lankford, and Lee. All three went to the Senate floor. What does the bill do? What's its purpose? We'll talk about it in just a moment. Also, former Attorney General of the U.S., Senator Jeff Sessions, will be here to discuss why the Department of Justice, under his leadership, upheld the biological reality of men and women, and where the court's redefinition of the word sex may lead us as a nation. In more disturbing news out of Turkey, Dr. Aykan Erdemir, senior director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, is here later on Washington Watch on the rise of anti-Semitism in Turkey. And here's a question for you. Have you noticed a little bias in the media toward President Trump? Now, I ask that tongue-in-cheek. There's no question the media is biased. However, it's become blatant. The president is scheduled to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on Saturday for his first major rally since the coronavirus hit the U.S. In a story published earlier this week, the AP connected Trump's rally to an ugly chapter in Oklahoma history on race that took place 100 years ago. We'll talk about how the media has become the opposition party in this country with John Daniel Davidson, political editor of The Federalist. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, let me just remind you, folks, we are coming up to the end of our budget year, and because of partners like many of you out there across the country who listen to Washington Watch, our program has continued to reach hundreds of thousands of Bible-believing Americans each and every day. Now, at a time when the media has never been more hostile to biblical values, we are here not only keeping you informed on what is really happening, but we're also giving voice to your values and upholding those values in Washington, D.C. So we've got some very generous supporters that have put forth a $1 million challenge. And so if you will partner with us, this will have the effect of doubling your gift, impacting and shaping the culture for Christ. You know, there's some disappointing things. I talked about it yesterday. This court decision that we're going to talk about in just a moment was discouraging. But we cannot yield up the territory that we've been given. We've been told to stand firm for truth. And so I challenge you to stand with us. We've got folks standing by to take your phone call. 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. If you'd like to be a partner with us and make sure that Washington Watch continues to be heard on now almost 400 stations across the nation, call us, 800-225-4008, or you can go to TonyPerkins.com and donate there as well. All right, with a majority of Americans distracted by the left's attempts to dismantle police departments across the country, or stunned by the court decision on Monday that turned science on its head, Senate Democrats attempted to fast-track Nancy Pelosi's deceptively named Equality Act. Fortunately, senators like Mike Lee, James Lankford, and Josh Hawley took a stand against the radical Equality Act. Joining me now with the details of all of this is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, I'm going to go here in just a moment. I've got a few clips from the three senators I mentioned that went to the floor earlier today. Now, two of those senators we've had on the program already this week discussing this. But, you know, a lot of folks were silent. But these three senators went to the Senate floor to talk about this. And first, I want to play this clip. We've got a clip of Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri talking about the Equality Act and this attempt to pass it through the process onto the Senate floor without actually having a hearing in the Senate on the bill. Here's a clip from Senator Hawley earlier today on the Senate floor.
But the effects of this bill, forcing taxpayers to pay for abortions, forcing doctors and nurses to perform abortions against their will, forcing faith-based hospitals and clinics to perform abortions. H.R. 5, this bill here, would supersede existing restrictions on abortion, including funding, including health and safety standards, and other regulations that the states have passed. It would force faith-based adoption agencies, some of which have been helping birth mothers find a safe and loving and permanent home for more than 100 years, it would force them out of business. It would coerce those who don't want to speak or who hold different beliefs into adopting this set of practices and principles and beliefs at work. These doctors, these nurses, these faith-based agencies. I submit to you that this is not the way to find consensus in America. This shunting aside of the constitutional rights of sincere, well-meaning people of faith is not the way to proceed. And this gutting of the Religious Freedom Act, and I say that because H.R. 5 explicitly carves out of the Religious Freedom Act, it explicitly carves out of its safety provisions all of those requirements I just mentioned. It rolls back the liberties afforded to people of faith.
Travis Weber, H.R. 5, the Equality Act, put forth by Nancy Pelosi, one of her top priorities. It did pass the House. It's been over in the Senate. They attempted to push this through today, as I mentioned, as the nation was distracted and still in shock from Monday's decision, turning science on its head by redefining the word science, I mean, the word sex. So what was attempted today? How what was the process?
Yeah, so Tony, the Equality Act, you know, which we've been keeping an eye on because, you know, frankly, we should really be calling this the Inequality Act or some other name for the bill, because as Senator Lee has noted the other day, it's not about equality. It's really it perpetuates inequality, violations of religious freedom. It's an anti-faith, anti-freedom, anti-life bill. Anyway, this bill, though, Senate Democrats are trying to move it, capitalizing on Monday's Supreme Court decision through a process by which they would what's termed a hotline the bill, move it through a procedural mechanism, which if no senator objects, the bill would proceed to a vote. Thankfully, as you mentioned, Senator Lankford objected, blocked the bill. He, along with Senator Lee, Senator Hawley, went down, expressed opposition, and articulated why this was a problem. You know, a lot of the Democrats in trying to push this bill forward, there's a lot of hand-waving and emotional pleas, and that doesn't change the fact that they're trying to defy reality with this bill, trying to suppress faith, suppress religious freedom. And it was important to see the arguments on the other side and hear them from Senators Hawley, Lee, and Lankford.
Now, one of the issues that Senator Hawley mentioned here in the latter part of that soundbite was how this would gut religious freedom. Now, in Monday's 33-page opinion, there was a little bit of reference made to religious freedom, but it was basically kicking the can down the road, saying, well, yeah, it'll affect it, but we'll just have to wait to see how. Well, one of the, I guess you would say, one of the major firewalls around the exercise of religious freedom in our country over the last two decades has been the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. What H.R. 5 specifically does is it eliminates those protections, and that's what Senator Hawley was making reference to.
Right, he was. And you know, I mean, Monday's decision is bad enough in its implications for religious freedom. The Equality Act would just wipe all that away. I mean, there are things that are yet to be decided that are unknowns. The Bostock decision on Monday is going to provoke years of litigation. The Equality Act will just wipe that off the table and say no more religious freedom. So, yeah, it would make things a lot worse, bad as they are right now, where, you know, we have a big can of unknowns. And the Bostock decision paid homage to religious freedom or tried to with a couple mentions of it. But it failed to deal with anything religious freedom wise. We're going to see years of litigation at all levels, with all types of challenges. This decision is going to provoke some of these conflicts in court. It's also going to spur on action at the state level and elsewhere, like we, you know, we're seeing action like the Senate Democrats are trying to move the Equality Act today. We're going to see action elsewhere spurred on by this decision. So these effects are going to be harmful for religious liberty, causing us to need to be more vigilant. But the Equality Act would have just wiped all that away and said no more religious freedom through a explicit gutting of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
In essence, what Monday's court decision did, that Justice Gorsuch wrote the opinion, the majority opinion, 6-3 decision, opened the door to this attack on religious freedom. But what H.R. 5 would do is basically kick the door down off the hinges. There would be no protections for religious freedom. Gorsuch opened the door for the attacks, and it's still yet to be seen what will come through that door. But this would have blown the door off the hinges. And that's what they were hoping to say. Oh, this is nothing more than in keeping in line with what the court said on Monday, when in fact it is not. It is going much, much further.
They would blow that door down on religious freedom and seek to open the door to other religious freedom violations in all sorts of areas of federal law. I mean, right now, the Title VII decision on Monday deals with employment law, employment issues. The Senate Democrats at the national level pushing the Equality Act want to just, you know, open up the doors to religious freedom violations in every respect. And frankly, if they get their wish with the Equality Act, blow the door, those doors down with a gutting of RFRA. So their vision is much more expansive, and they're not satisfied with Monday's decision. They're only spurred on and encouraged.
Let's. I've got another clip. I have a clip here from Senator James Lankford. As you mentioned, he is the one who objected to the fast tracking of this piece of legislation. He also spoke to the floor. This is what he had to say earlier today.
We in America have tried to work together in all of our differences for over two centuries to learn better how to be able to hear the rights of another one, to be able to accommodate, and to be able to find those spots where the rights collide of two individuals, and to be able to work it out among each other. The Equality Act does not do that. I wish it did. It changes things dramatically. Let me just give you a few examples. It reaches into high school sports and says for male and female sports that individuals, sexual orientation, gender identity, can move between those. There is no standard for testosterone. There is no standard for moving through transition, surgery. There is no standard at all set on it. It opens it up for any male, biological male, to step into female sports on the high school level or in the college level or in the pro athlete level and to be able to move into that sport. That grossly disadvantages girls in sports. But their rights are denied. We've already seen this in several states.
So, Travis, we're going to have to go to a break. We may pick this up a little bit later in the program, so stand by, and we'll continue this. But next, we're going to turn our attention to the former Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, continuing this conversation, because it was under his leadership the Department of Justice reversed the Obama administration in its interpretation of the word sex. This was all started by the Obama administration, of course, carried on by the court on Monday, redefining the word sex away from its biological meaning of male and female. Senator Jeff Sessions is here next. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Tony Perkins here, and this is Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. Again, let me remind you, as we come up to the end of our fiscal year, we've got some team members standing by to take your phone call. If you'd like to partner with us and ensure that this program continues, as I mentioned earlier, we're bumping up against about 400 stations across the nation that every day, Monday through Friday, are able to hear Washington Watch directly from the newsmakers, unfiltered by the left-leaning media. And we have some very generous donors who put forth a $1 million challenge. And in essence, everything you give will be doubled. So if you'd like to be a part of that, give us a call, 800-225-4008, or go to tonyperkins.com. All right, the Supreme Court decision we've been talking about all week, redefining the word sex in federal law, Title VII. Of course, we say, you know, what's next? I mean, they're going to come back wanting to redefine it in every way possible. Of course, the Equality Act, as we were just talking about, would have done that already. And again, it's another example. The legislative body has refused to redefine the word sex to include gender identity and gender orientation, sexual orientation. And the court did it, at least in this one provisional law. This started under Barack Obama. The attorney general, first attorney general for Donald Trump, under his Department of Justice, they went back to the original definition of sex, the biological definition, and upheld that. And that, unfortunately, was undercut in court on Monday. Here to talk about why and where this may lead the nation is the former Attorney General of the U.S., Senator Jeff Sessions. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's always good to be with you.
All right. Let me just put those two questions before you. Why did you think it was important for your Department of Justice to uphold the biological definition of male-female in the word sex?
Well, we thought it was plainly so. There is no way that anybody would reasonably contend that in 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed and it protected one against discrimination based on sex, that they meant anything other than biological sex. They certainly didn't mean that this was going to alter bathrooms so males could go into women's bathrooms, at least male physically, nor that physical, excuse me, nor that biological males could compete against females in athletic events, they would never have passed such a law. So it was never intended that way by any fair reading, but it bubbled up. The Obama administration took the position, along with the ABC agency, EEOC, that it did cover transgender people, whatever their sexual identity was. So when the litigation started, Obama defended that position. When I became Attorney General under President Trump, we reversed it and took the position that the statute did not mean that. The statute meant simply biological sex, and nobody would have ever imagined otherwise. It's just a very, very dangerous and frustrating decision because, you know, Justice Alito, one of the great, great justices on the court, said there's only one word to call this opinion, and that's legislation.
Right.
Not law. He said it was preposterous and that it was a brazen abuse of the court's power. So we're in this position where judges seem to feel it upon themselves to decide social policy questions that Congress has rejected. As you know, Tony, Congress, a lot of talk about changing the law to include transgender, and Congress has not done it.
Right.
They refuse to do so.
And
so
they
get the courts to do that which the people's elected representatives would not do.
And
that
to,
is not a role of the court.
And to right. And to Justice Alito's point, this is beyond the constitutional authority of the court to legislate, is it not?
I certainly believe that. Fundamentally, courts do not legislate. They take an oath, and that oath is to serve under the Constitution and the laws of the United States, under them. They're not above them. Their oath is to serve the law as it is, not as they might wish it to be. And I remember, Tony, I'll just share this little anecdote. Justice Roberts, when he came around to be up for the Supreme Court, and we talked in my office, I was a member of the Judiciary Committee, and I'm not sure, but we discussed a neutral umpire, that a judge was an umpire and couldn't take sides in the game, and that was probably later when he testified, he used that phrase. He says a judge is a neutral umpire, calls balls and strikes, does not take sides in the game. And so I remember that. I don't think he honored that.
As the top law enforcement official, as the Attorney General of the United States, upholding the laws of this country, I mean, we saw this under the Obama administration. We began to see this lawlessness. The Attorney General under him held in contempt of Congress for not providing information to Congress. We've seen this lawlessness break forth. Let me ask you this question, Senator. When the court goes beyond its constitutional authority, isn't that also a form of lawlessness?
Well, it is. It absolutely is. And good and dutiful Americans, good people, church-going, good, decent people, try to do the right thing, acknowledge, well, we'll accept the rule of the courts. And I have, accepted opinions I vehemently disagree with. But I tell you, these two cases, today and yesterday, have made me rethink it. I cannot have the same degree of respect for the courts as I used to have. And I think the court is on a dangerous path. If it loses the confidence of the American people, the rule of law is in danger.
Senator Sessions, I could not agree with you more. Because I think whether you're wearing a black hoodie looting a business or you're wearing a black robe redefining words that people count on, it's all the same. And it gives rise to lawlessness and a disrespect for the law. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to continue this conversation. Maybe next week we'll get you to come back on and talk more about it. Folks, don't go away. More to come as we see more disturbing news coming out of Turkey, this time anti-Semitism. That's next. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and the website is tonyperkins.com. All right, Turkey's growing anti-Semitism is driving Turkish Jews out of their homeland. Turkey's distaste for religious freedom extends to Christians as well, as you look back on the wrongful imprisonment of Andrew Brunson. But yesterday we were talking about how they've been targeting Yazidis in northern Iraq. Well, joining me now to talk about this escalating situation is Dr. Aykan Erdemir. He is the senior director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, the Turkey program, and a former member of the Turkish parliament who's actually testified before the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom about Turkey's religious hostility. Dr. Erdemir, thank you so much for joining us here on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's a great pleasure to join you.
All right. Tell us what's going on in Turkey. I saw your tweet regarding this rising anti-Semitism. What's happening?
So the broader context is for the last 18 years, Turkey has been ruled by an Islamist government. And this has had a major effect on Turkey's religious freedoms as well as on Turkey's religious and ethnic minorities. Just to give you the numbers, in Turkey's first ever official census in 1927, there were 81,000 Jews who back then made up 0.6% of this young republic's population. But today, and the republic's population has grown eightfold, the Jews, the population of Turkey's Jews came down to 16,000. Which is only 0.002%. So there is a mass exodus of Turkey's Jews. And when we're talking about Jews, I'm talking about over two millennia of history in these lands, you know, from Romano Jews to the Sephardic Jews to the Ashkenazi Jews. Turkey has a diverse Jewish community, but sadly, they no longer see a future in Turkey.
So what is driving them out?
First of all, there's state-sanctioned anti-Semitism uttered by the highest-ranking officials in the country, propagated through state-run or pro-government media outlets. And worse, then, of course, turning into a grassroots a wave of prejudice and hate. So especially Turkey's younger Jews do not want to live in such an environment of hate, and they do not want to raise their children. They do not want to have families in such a setting, so they're taking off either for North America or for Europe or for Israel.
So, Dr. Erdemir, but their hostility, I'm talking about Turkey, the government, their hostility is not reserved just for Jews alone.
Not at all. In fact, just last week, we have heard heartbreaking stories of a Protestant church worker, a pastor, who's a Turkish citizen, and the way Turkey pushed him out of Turkey was to deny his spouse a residence permit after almost a decade in Turkey. So they are breaking up families to make sure Protestant pastors and missionaries can no longer live and work in Turkey. And before, there was a systematic campaign to push out numerous Protestant missionaries and pastors who were foreign nationals by, again, either denying them visas or refusing to renew their residence and work permits. And this was a systematic policy to basically decimate the community in Turkey.
So, Dr. Erdemir, is it the trajectory here, is this in escalating in terms of this religious hostility we see in Turkey?
Actually, it's paradoxically, it's going in two directions. On the one hand, we see these theatrics, what I call theatrics of tolerance, the Turkish government restoring a church or a synagogue, or the Turkish president issuing an Easter or a Passover message. But on the other hand, you see this enormous push to inculcate hate and prejudice through pro-government and government-run channels and media. So I would argue that on the one hand, you have these performances of tolerance, which is mainly geared toward fooling international audiences. But on the other hand, what really happens at the ground level is pushing out, you know, Christians and Jews and Baha'is and other religious minorities from Turkey. And that, of course, is, I think, part and parcel of the overall Islamist, authoritarian, sectarian, majoritarian agenda of the current Turkish government and its strongman, Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
So we see a symbolism of tolerance, but a substance of hostility.
Exactly. Very well put.
Dr. Erdemir, thank you so much for joining us. And let me thank you for your great work on keeping a keen eye on what is happening in Turkey as it pertains to religious freedom. We're grateful for your work.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure joining you.
All right, Dr. Aykan Erdemir, Senior Director of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Now, let me just remind you, I mentioned this yesterday, you know, Turkey is supposed to be a NATO ally. I'm hard-pressed to find out how find room in the alliance for a country such as Turkey. And they're getting worse. They're getting worse. All right, coming up, media bias. I mean, the media has become the opposition party to the Trump administration and to all things conservative. I saw an AP story about the president's rally that he's hosting in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Saturday, tying it back to an event that occurred almost 100 years ago. We'll talk about it next with John David Davidson. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me remind you, we're coming up to the end of our fiscal year, and we sure could have, we'd love to have you partner with us. In fact, I got folks standing by. If you'd like to call one of our team members and be a part of supporting Washington Watch, which, as I mentioned, is now on almost 400 stations across the nation, give us a call, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Because of a generous $1 million challenge match that's put out there, what you give today essentially will be doubled. Give us a call, 800-225-4008. All right, let me ask you a question. I asked at the beginning of the program, do you think the media is biased against President Trump and the Trump administration? Yeah, I know. It's a rhetorical question. And the media has always been left-leaning, more so since 2008. I watched it. I used to be a reporter, so I've been a defender of the media for many, many years. But in 2008, they began tracking left, and now they've become what I call the opposition party. The AP had a story, I think, on Monday or Tuesday, which really highlighted this. The president is going to Tulsa, Oklahoma on Saturday for the first rally since the coronavirus outbreak. And I think they've had over 1 million people request tickets to the event. But that's not the point. They're criticizing, you know, about the, you know, the coronavirus and all this stuff. That's not the point. An AP story goes back almost 100 years, actually to 1921, when there was a very ugly episode in the history of Oklahoma, in Tulsa, rather, where there was essentially attacks on black people in Tulsa, African Americans. And it was a horrible event. There's no covering it up. But that happened 121 years ago, and people have, you know, they've made peace, and, you know, they even have a statue there, you know, reconciliation, all of this. Well, the media wants to tie that event to Trump's rally and all the division that has been going on across the nation. They want to dredge this up and somehow connect it to President Trump's rally. Here's my view. The opposition party, the media, not only opposing the president, but they're the ones dividing the nation. here with maybe another perspective or to add to this is the political editor of The Federalist, John Daniel Davidson. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
So, John, am I accurate in this portrayal that the media has become the opposition party?
I think so. And I think the Trump's election in 2016 leaves little doubt about where the media lies on the political spectrum. We've known this for a long time, as you mentioned earlier. You know, newsrooms have been overwhelmingly staffed by people who support Democrats, who vote Democrat, and of course, people coming out of journalism schools tend to be liberal and left leaning. But it's reached a new level, I think, with the Trump administration, because the media sees itself as not just you know, the fourth estate that's supposed to report the news and hold power accountable, but sees itself as active resistance to the Trump administration.
I mean, am I reading too much into this AP story that wants to dredge up a century-old incident, which has been resolved by local officials and local citizens there in Tulsa, and tie that to a rally that Trump is doing in the midst of a nation that is already divided over the race issue?
Not at all. The media never misses an opportunity to connect bad things to the Trump administration, however far-fetched or false they might be. You're going to see the same types of coverage when he actually has the rally, which I think is scheduled for Saturday in Tulsa, about how this is going to be a super spreader event for the coronavirus and how it's dangerous and reckless. And they're going to talk about it in terms that they have not used for any of the mass rallies and protests and riots that we've seen across the country in recent weeks. All of that is okay. But Trump's rally, where there's also a large gathering of people, is somehow not okay. So you're going to see that double standard. You know, you can see it coming a mile away.
John, that is an excellent point that, you know, there's been these massive protests. And I wouldn't even call them, they're not rallies, they're protests. They're, you know, they're occupying, you know, entire downtown districts, blocks, city blocks. And no talk about the spreading of the virus in that. But you have the president holding a rally in which people are assembling to express their First Amendment rights, and all of a sudden this is a health hazard.
You already have seen outlets like the New York Times run articles with headlines like, could Trump's rally in Tulsa be a super spreader event for the coronavirus? They didn't run any headlines like that about these Black Lives Matter rallies and protests. In fact, just the opposite. They played up the fact that public health experts had come out saying, public health is about more than just not getting the coronavirus, and these rallies are necessary for public health, which is crazy. But the media just repeats it as though it's fact because some ideological health experts said so.
So, John, do we see a continuing or an acceleration of the trend of Americans failing or refusing to trust the media because of the blatant bias nature we see now?
Absolutely. Public trust in the media has got to be at an all-time low. And that tracks with other institutions in American life that Americans have lost trust in, along with government, Congress, the courts, the police department, big business, corporate America, but the media really ranks really far down on the ladder, and they've earned it by a pattern of dishonesty, disingenuousness, and in some cases just outright deception. And we've seen this throughout the Trump presidency, starting from the general election campaign in the fall of 2016, immediately with Trump-Russia collusion, the Mueller probe, the horrible treatment of Justice Kavanaugh, the impeachment farce, then to the coronavirus coverage, and now to the Black Lives Matter rallies and the double standards that we see across the mainstream media. It's one thing after another. and you got to hand it to the media. They're predictable in this respect. You know which way they're going to go.
So, John, one final question for you, and I agree with everything you just said. And I do, the polling shows this, the surveys show that the American people are distrusting of the media more so than ever. But does this give an opportunity for others to step into that breach, like the Federalist and others who, you know, clearly not pulling any punches, conservative, but straightforward and honest? Does this give those type of outlets an opportunity to reach the American people?
I think it has. And in part, I think it has. And in part, I think, you know, outlets like the Federalist and other right of center outlets are honest about the perspective that they're coming from. You know, we have a lot of different views at the Federalist, and we don't agree on everything. We have disagreements across a range of issues. We don't do editorials for that reason. And you're going to hear a lot of different competing views on the news of the day at our website. But we're at least honest about the fact that we are expressing opinions. We're backing them up with facts and research and reported pieces. But we have a point of view. We have a perspective. I think a lot more people would trust the mainstream media if they would just dispense with this fiction that they don't have a point of view and that they're just reporting the facts. It's not true. Nobody believes it. It undermines their credibility at every turn.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. John Daniel Davidson, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Political editor at The Federalist, John Daniel Davidson. I think, excellent point. You know, they say we're right of center. And that's the same thing here at the Family Research Council at Washington Watch. We are coming at this from a biblical perspective. We're not trying to put a spin on it or deceive anybody. That's how we see it. We see the world through the lenses of Scripture. And that is the viewpoint you will get here. And we'll put out the facts. I like to put forth the newsmakers so you can hear them for yourself. And I'll put in my thoughts and commentary in between. But we are, that's who we are. And quite frankly, I think we need more of that at this time. I want to go back. I promised this earlier. I was going to try to go back to the issue of the Equality Act that the Senate Democrats tried to ram through today in the Senate. Of course, they don't have the support for it. They were unable to do it. Senator Lankford of Oklahoma objected to it, and we had Senator Lee, Senator Holly, and Senator Lankford went to the floor. They weren't the only ones to speak on it. And Travis Weber is back with me. Travis, thanks for sticking around.
Sure thing, Tony.
I wanted to continue our colleague because Jeff, I mean, our conversation. Jeff Merkley of Oregon went to the Senate floor. He's Democrat. He obviously was in support of the Equality Act. But he takes up this issue that we were talking about earlier, Travis, the issue of religious freedom and how this would gut the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And essentially, the Democratic Party has taken a whole different position on religious freedom. And I want to talk about this after we play this clip from Senator Jeff Merkley.
My colleagues also refer to how somehow this bill affects religious rights. And I'm taken back through the history of the conversation and dialogue about equality and opportunity in America, how every time we seek to end discrimination, someone says, but wait, religious rights. Remember that this was the argument against black and brown Americans from having equality here in the United States of America because their religion said they're not equal and they shouldn't be let in the door. And I should have the right to not let them in the door. I should have the right to discriminate. And isn't that the conversation we heard around the opportunity for women in America to play a full role in our society? That people had a religious foundation for discriminating between men and women.
Where do we begin with the problems with his line of reasoning and argumentation?
Yeah, Tony, I think the way to sum this up is by noting that it's just totally disconnected from reality. The Democrats used to champion religious freedom. Senator Schumer himself was the sponsor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 1993, along with a number of other Democrat co-sponsors. They've thrown that overboard. They've thrown religious freedom overboard when it no longer suits their interests and their policy preferences. But this is heavily and highly disconnected from reality, their own reality of what they have claimed to support in the past. I don't know whether to take their support for religious freedom in the past as disingenuous or to observe that they've thrown it overboard. But either way, it's a problem. They also just fail to recognize the historic role of religious freedom in the United States, what it's given this country of people who are able to freely practice their faith, people who disagree, people who used to live side by side in a society disagreeing on matters. That really seems to be gone. And they're perpetuating with these arguments an intolerance to that, an intolerance to ideas different from their own, intolerance to religious beliefs, and intolerance to anything but their policy agenda. So disconnected from reality and problematic to see elected leaders saying there are special religious rights that they can't be tolerant of. This is troublesome to anyone.
Yeah, and of course, they want to equate sexual identity, gender identity, sexual behavior with innate trait or the color of one's skin, the fact that one is born a male or female. Those are two different things. When you look at selected behavior or perceived identity, that's different than a trait that you were born with.
Johnny, this is a point that's often overlooked in this whole conversation, the attempt to piggyback on the civil rights movement, piggyback on the women's rights movement, to push through the LGBT rights movement. And Justice Kavanaugh, in his dissent, he even noted this piggybacking, and he called it out. He said it's ridiculous and shouldn't, it's not true. But they're doing this because it's advantageous to them. It's advantageous to try to capitalize on the civil rights movement in the African-American community, the struggle, which we all recognize. Everyone recognizes the historic struggle in this country coming out of slavery through Jim Crow. Even, to today, we're seeing protesters deal with these issues. But to see them try to the LGBT community to piggyback on that or try to piggyback on that, it's just not true. It's not true, and it's insulting to that movement, honestly.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about that because that's one of the main lines of argument they use, trying to attach their wagon to certainly a period in United States history, in American history, that was wrong in the way that African Americans, Black Americans were treated. And we had to fight a war to get it right. We did, still paying the price for it. But this is something totally different, and we need to spend more time talking about that. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you for joining us as well. If you missed anything on your ride home tonight, you can find it all later at TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, which are found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.